In a world with many similarities to our own, there lies two planets that are both experiencing societal turmoil. One of them, the planet Remus, there lies a town named Hazel that is on the outskirts of one of the busiest cities on the planet. While society is strained with cultural change, in this town, there are beings that no one has seen and struggle not to be found as time goes on. The following is the story of some of the people who end up finding them through no fault of their own. This is Hazeltown Story. Hello, and welcome to Hazeltown Story. This is going to be an interesting episode because this is what I'm considering the first episode of essentially a complete reboot of the show. There has definitely been a lot of shows that we've done beforehand. I actually can't remember how many years worth of shows we've done at this point, but we have been doing this for a while, but a lot of things kind of got convoluted over the years, so I kind of didn't know where to go, so we're just saying, screw it, we're starting over. Also, we have made enough changes to our system that I kind of wanted to start a new thing with at least a more concrete system. I think the system's about as good as we ever gotten, and we've kind of pared down a lot of stuff that we don't really need. So I think it's actually good to, well, it probably could get fixed up if we ever, you know, wanted to do anything more than just our little game. But I did want to refresh things up and start with a new, kind of a, at least a good solid foundation. So before I introduce our players for today, I do want to kind of just do a quick description of what exactly Hazeltown Story is. You can do two different definitions of this. First and foremost, it is an actual play podcast like the umpteen million that already exist. But I kind of wanted this one to be a lot of like actual play tabletop like stuff is like really cleaned up and really like trying to spin a narrative, which this one does kind of try, and I use it as a way to kind of work with my own ability to like create a narrative. But I kind of want this one. This one is more focused on being a let's call it a little bit messy in the case, because I kind of wanted something that actually like captures tabletop like actually as it is played. So this is one that is not exactly super cleaned up. There's going to be a lot of talking about rules and just explaining things that normally would get cut out, but I kind of want to leave it in because I want this to kind of just be an actual tabletop session. Like, I just want this to be like, you know, a recording of an actual tabletop, so you can actually, if you've never been in one, you can kind of understand what's going on about it. And also, I am a relatively new DM, so or GM, I guess, in this case. So I want to capture the things that you'd kind of have to think about as a GM when you're kind of doing stuff. So that's kind of what this is going to be about. It's another tabletop podcast, one that is a little bit less filtered and more, hey, this is the kind of stuff, especially since we're using a homebrew system. So if you ever want to realize the foibles of doing a homebrew system live, that's what it is. So that's kind of what this focus is meant to be. And this is actual tabletop, and I guess this would be the second definition. This is a, well, I guess we're going to kind of go more a little bit into it, but this is a, actually, I think I might go into that more because we kind of actually have to figure out what are some aspects of our setting anyway. So we will kind of, I'll kind of explain the setting as we go because we need to establish some ground rules because we're going to keep some aspects of the old stuff in. I am kind of doing this from the viewpoint that this is not something that you shouldn't have to know any previous. You shouldn't have had to listen to a single episode of the past stuff in order to enjoy this stuff. So we'll kind of explain things as we go and kind of, but we're going to keep some old things, but it'll be kind of reintroduced. You might notice that this particular recording is going to have the subtitle. It is going to be Hazeltown Story Team Misk, Team Misk is basically what I'm going to label our sessions when we're going to play with the current group of people that we have here. Before I guess we get further along, let me introduce you to, or let me allow the players of this group to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Carnival.
I am, of course, Deathmaster 780.
And I guess I'm Torpa Typist, apparently.
Yep. So Carnival DM and Torpo are going to be making up Team Misk. So I guess let's kind of figure out what Team Misk is, because we had a bunch of roundtables about what we wanted to do. And here is generally the gist of what I plan on this being. And we're going to start this from a little bit of a more larger scale overview. The setting of this is basically go ahead.
I was going to say, are we just going to say an Earth-like planet that is analogous to Earth, but not just, since we're doing a full reboot, since we might as well not just, are we still keeping over Earth history as well?
So the thing is that the universe that takes place in, there are two Earth-like planets. One is actually more directly analogous to Earth. Another one, which is the one that you are, this is all going to take place on, the two planets Romulus and Remus. The old Earth essentially is, or like Earth is essentially Romulus. This one is Remus. There are countries that aren't, I wouldn't call them analogous to actual countries. There are some that are there via, like, the U.S. is there, but that's just because it was colonized and called the U.S., even though it's not exactly the U.S. It might as well be. There is a bunch of other countries that are not, don't have they don't have an analogy on Earth. Basically, this takes place in the country that is referred to as the Council of Seabearer Nations. The CSN is kind of what it's generally referred to. You are a neighbor of the U.S., particularly its western neighbor that basically takes up the land that would basically occupy most of the Midwest and also like Washington and Oregon. Basically, a huge chunk of the middle of the U.S. Is actually occupied by the CSN. It is a country that I'm just trying to think of what to explain it. Basically, I'll do it like this. The time period in which this takes place in is, let's just call it, it is like the 1970s culturally. In particular, I would imagine 1970 itself culturally. So just at the end of the 60s, there is magic in this world that has helped technology boom a little bit. So your technology is roughly, I would say, in the 80s. Although there is some also advanced stuff that it would even go into the 90s or early 2000s in some aspects. But culturally, I would call it the 1970s. Give or take a few years for some things. So not everything that occurred in 1970 is like here. There is some wiggle room in that with fun alternate history stuff. The city that this takes place in is in basically in a pair of two, like a city and there is some outside towns around it, some satellite towns, effectively. The big city that you were next to, or one of the biggest metropolitan areas of the country, which is the Steinwald. The Steinwald is an interesting country or city in the CSN, because it is a city that is primarily, like, it has a heavy immigrant population, because it is basically a place where a lot of people who immigrated to the country kind of ended up. It is, I would say, probably 50% population is people who who originated outside of the CSN. They're non-native, peoples, I guess. Like they came from other places. It is a very advanced metropolitan area, but it is also one that is very, I'm trying to think if there is like a name for, like, it is a very ecologically friendly city. A lot of the buildings have green, like actually have greenery on them. It's a lot of, if you've seen the, like, trying to think of like the prototype videos of like places where they've had like the skyscrapers that have complete, that are like basically completely covered in plant.
Yeah, like Ditcher said, the eco-friendly zone.
Yeah, but it is a, let's call it a culture. Like, it is a city that's mostly known for its culture. You could almost, like, trying to think, like, you could almost say it is analogous to like, a New York. But not, obviously, it's not New York, because New York exists. But, yeah, so there are a number of smaller towns that are around it. Some examples, Hazeltown being one, which is, like, a, it's a very much like a suburb town. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, there's one of the towns that are, like, outside of Chicago that aren't, like, it's its own thing, but it might as well basically be, like, oh, it's just in the shadow of the city. But it's a smaller town where it's a good place to raise a family.
Horrifying.
In regards to, like, the actual population, it is a mix-mash of basically any species that exist outside of the planet. There are a number of, you know, humans exist there. They're mostly humans of actually various different types exist. Pretty much any race that could potentially show up in either two planets has a decent sized population there. So there are a number of animal people that are floating, that are basically living there. Actually, the native peoples, I guess, if you'd call them that, the people who like were originally of the region, are primarily rabbit, cat, and mice, I believe, are the species that live in this area, like, natively. And that's kind of what's going on. Like, I'm trying to think of what else to kind of note. As I said, magic is there. So there's been a history of magic. There is a number of different types of magic that only a percentage of people can use. Like, I'd say about 1 in 5 generally can use some form of magic. Some people are more in tune to other types of magic than others. So there are, it is something that has some application, although with the, there are technological advances that allow for magical items to be used by people who don't exactly practice magic. For example, most firearms are not exactly like firearms. They are in fact basically guns that project via magic, little projectiles. And I'm just trying to think what else to, what else would I want to state. There are I guess going more into what actually involves with your people is that there are, with the magic being a thing, there are also interesting magical phenomena that not a whole lot of people experience. So there's been a lot of, you'd imagine with magic, there is a lot of, like, I mean, even now in our world, that there's like cryptids and stuff. So there's a lot. The area has a lot of history and legend around weird mystical beings. So it is an area that has generated a lot of interest of people who are into the occult and into like cryptids and into that sphere of things, paranormal activity, the people who study that. There are some actual recorded cases of paranormal beings, such as beings known as relics, which are basically beings that are attuned to very specific items. For example, like a book that might pertain, basically seem to be connected to a person, that can appear or manifest in the form of what one might call a ghost. So there are things like that. I guess I'm kind of, or rather than kind of list everything, we'll kind of probably do this more as it comes up. Because I know these three are more familiar with the actual, like, area, because I played games in it already. Yeah. But if you're now listening to this for the first time, it will probably explain more things. So, that being said, you all are, as this is referred to as Team Misk, you are in fact Team Misk, which isn't exactly your official name, but you don't really have enough. Because what you all are is a group of, let's call them people who know each other, that all have kind of loosely formed a team that is good at one very specific thing, that being looking into incidents and looking for objects that no one really, like, you're the ones that are looking at weird shit, effectively.
I can't believe we're Mystery Inc.
Yeah, you are effectively Mystery Inc.
Hey now, we had state backing at one point. We are better than Mystery Inc.
Well, we're going to find out whether you still have it, so...
Yeah, I have a list of questions for reframing some of this stuff.
Okay, so, yeah, now I'm trying to think, because all of you, that being you, all have a number of characters. Actually, what I should do is actually frame this as, what is it? This is a tabletop game, or like podcast. Figure what actually is on the tabletop, because I've mentioned that this is a homebrew system. And to further elaborate on what that system is, this is kind of a hodgepodge of a mix of rules that kind of we took from the Powered by the Apocalypse engine, and also, is Forge in the Dark is technically what
Blades in the Dark.
But yeah, Forge in the Dark is generic, but based on the game Blades in the Dark by John Harper of 1-7 Design.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a mix of that. It is a game that we have combat rules, and we have rules about magic use and all sorts of things, but although this is primarily going to be an investigation. Combat can show up. We do have rules for it, although they're kind of genericized, as we have found out by doing multiple combat tests. So this system allows for having characters, and some have more than others. So let's kind of figure out before what we all kind of figure out what Team Misk is. Let's kind of go through the characters and see how, if we want to continue using them, or how do we want to frame this? Because all of your characters are also at various different levels. This is not a system that has set levels, although as you kind of go through and it's progression. These characters have different levels of progress, because in this system, the generic, or to kind of go over what builds a character, every character picks from two of a list of, I think, is it 12 archetypes or is it 15?
Let's count.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't know how to count.
I think it's 5, 6. Actually, I think 7, it's 18.
8, 9, 10, 11, 13.
We did 17, add some. 18. I think
18.
At one point.
It's 18. So you pick from two of 18 archetypes. Archetypes in this can range from. Actually, I can just read it. Let's see. We got the muscle, the marksman, the rogue, the inspector, the skulker, the scholar, the face, the leader, the showman, the heart, the wizard, the engineer, the occultist, the agent, the sworn, the relic, the automaton, and the Lochian. So you pick two of those, and that will make up, that'll give you a lot of your abilities. Each one comes with a ability as you kind of use the ability or use the traits that character you like would use. Like, for example, the more the muscle uses a physical action, you get XP for that, although it's more for failure, because if you succeeded, why, you don't need a buff, but as you kind of do more, you get more stuff. There's built, each archetype has its own stuff. It's the same as like a class in most of them. But there is, each one picks two archetypes. You also pick two sets of skills, which can be range from things like magic, magic skills, or magic traits. For example, you can play a character that does not have, that actually counters magic natively. Or you can pick something that says, oh, I want to focus on academic training, which gives me buffs to various skills and such. You pick two of those. And then there's also... equipment is pretty, there's like some slots for items that you can take, which this is not that it, I'm not caring about that. But then there's also a number of skills that you just skills like strike, aim, maneuver, research, tinker, interface. Hot tip is the tooltip. There we go. Investigate, sabotage, intuit, introspect, connect, and channel, and charm, intimidate, and deceive. So kind of a homebrew mix of stuff that you'd find in Forge in the Dark or games or Powered by the Apocalypse, but yeah, I might not do the greatest job of explaining it through text, but it's, if you were to ever see it, it would kind of make sense. And I'll try and explain things as we go, so there will be that. So in regards to all your characters, let's start with
Can I start with the first of my questions?
Oh, sure.
Which is, we're going with the assumption that we're all pre-existing characters who know each other, right? Still?
Yes, I was going to, as part of this, I was going to go and say that we need to figure out how you all know each
other. Yeah, because in the original game, it was through, does your group does your character group have a name?
Oh, like, yes, it was Team Reading Rainbow.
All right, well, assuming this new timeline, we don't know them?
No, you do not.
All right.
They are three of us.
Yes, except maybe Toby. Toby might come back.
Yeah, well, we got to figure out you might get a new Toby, but we'll talk that. I figure we should probably discuss your characters.
Pour one out for your boy.
So who wants to start?
Let's just go left to right. Start for Arabia.
Okay, so Torpo.
Actually, we should start with Arabia, all things considered.
Yeah, so Torpo, you have two characters. You have Aravia, who is the longest character, went from the very first version of this game to now.
A bunch of characters have been around for a long time. She has been the most consistent.
Yeah, because for the longest time, you were sticking with her versus everyone bouncing between multiple characters.
Yep.
You have two characters, Aravia and Queen. Is there anything? I would imagine that you want to keep her up.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to keep her at the level she is, or do we want to potentially de-level her? Because she was your only character, she is by far the strongest character of the game.
She is jacked as fuck.
She is three levels away from maxing out her first archetype, which is the occultist. And she is four skills away from maxing out the muscle. And then her stats are pretty good. She has four in strike, two in maneuver, one in tinker, two in investigate, two in intuit, two in introspect, two in channel, and four in intimidate. Which four is basically the skill scale basically goes four is, I think, the highest?
Yeah.
Yes, four is the highest.
So you're pretty good with her.
She is super jacked.
But would you by chance want to lower that? Or do we want to have a character that basically, like, do we want to have a high-level character?
I will say this. If we're starting anew, I'm more than willing to kneecap her.
Okay.
Just take her out back with a baseball bat.
Okay, so you can feel free to lower her at as many as you want.
I'll do that off screen, yes.
Okay, so you can figure out what that is. I won't say, like, well, we could probably figure that out once you, or you can feel how comfortable or how much you want to limit her versus how everyone else does. You also have Queen. Now, Queen is new. Like, she has...
She's fresh as fuck.
She does have, like, a level in her first archetype, which is the Rogue, and her second archetype, which is the muscle. I don't think she's upgraded any of her skills at this point. I think she might as well be fresh.
She's borderline fresh.
I take it you would want to keep her? Okay.
But we'll worry about her another time.
She still hasn't been properly introduced in any of the campaigns.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we'll kind of leave her alone.
Put her in the baby jail.
All right.
Okay, so let's go through your characters. You have Claudia Lupin, Elmis Grainer.
Yep.
Peony Clarent, Yuhar Govnen, and Virtue's Eternal Reward, which I always have to try and pause for a second before I say it.
I will not apologize.
So, Elmas, I think, is your earliest character. I think Elmas is technically as old as Raphael.
Yes.
Although, yep. Because of you bouncing between your characters, they aren't, like, that built. Like,
yeah.
In their first archetype, which is the Inspector, you got 4 extra, it looks like.
Yeah, I've got 4 left over. And then in the Engineer, I've got, like, I think 6.
You have 6 left to spend. So you have... They're not exactly super built, so...
Yeah, I don't think I need to really pull back any of my characters, just because I was the other system designer, so my pulse of, like, I need to test this stuff.
I should, for the record, state that this was not my entire creation. Actually, I will credit half or over half of this to Carnival, who is more versed in tabletop than I am, so I... do have to credit them for doing a lot of work on this, or at least figuring, or like poking a lot of like things about it. So Elmas, I think Elmas is fine as a mid.
I'd say mid tier character. Yuhar was like Carnival's most jacked character.
I think that just was because well, actually, before we get to Yuhar, just going from left to right, Peony is like, is Peony the newest?
Yeah, Peony's the newest because I wanted to read, since we redone the heart to some, the divinity to the heart, we needed someone new.
Yeah, so Peony has, like, nothing. I think Peony
She's fresh.
Peony hasn't been used at all, like, even in, like, the combat session.
Peony and copy of Peony.
Yeah, we need to do some cleanup, but that's not something we need to worry about right now. after Peony, we got Yuhar, who has stuff. I'd say in the level of Elmas, but
yeah, about the same level as Elmas.
Let's see your archetypes for them. They got 3 in each of their archetypes: the Rogue and the Leader.
Yep.
Then also we got telepathy and performance training, and yeah. So then we have Virtue's Eternal Reward, which is. Also relative, actually, it's still almost say just as fresh, although Virtue's actually had more experience, I guess, just to generally.
She never did poorly is the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I never did poorly when playing her, so she didn't get XP.
So that is also our requisite relic. Well, one of our requisite relics, and also our wizard.
We got a sword and we got a rock.
Yeah. So I guess, Carnival, the question I have to ask, do you want to continue using these 5 characters, or do you want to maybe sunset one of them, or 2 of them? The choice is yours. If you want to keep all 5, that's perfectly fine.
I think I'm fine with all 5. It's just, I'm thinking about it, because none of them, I think, are, like, well, one, Peony's got to stay, because, like, the tester in me is like, no, she hasn't actually been out.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Breed's a beast.
I don't think any of them really need to be sunset. Because I think I've done a pretty decent job of just going through each of them as needed.
Okay. Let's see. Next up, we got DM's characters. So, naturally, technically, these are out of order. But you got 4. You have Bobby, who is not the oldest, but I would say your most used.
Yeah, it's the second highest level character after Aravia.
Yeah. So, your... His first class is, or his first archetype is the Face, which you are only missing 4 from. Yes. And then the same with the Agent, which you're only missing 4. So you're almost as higher level as Aravia. And look at your skills. Also
note the skills, yes.
The skills. Well, the thing is, you're more focused because your skills are, let's see, 3 aim, 2 investigate, 3 sabotage. 2 intuit, and then 4 charm and 4 deceive. So you
experience in them.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think the XP just hasn't cleared out yet. So disgusting. You have actually leveled twice in regards to skill. So I will give you the same thing that'll say Rabia, if you want to kneecap, so to speak, Bobby, feel free. But you don't have to.
I'm good.
Okay. Then we got Nelos Masters, who is the third oldest, well, one of the OGs. Has some stuff, has leveled up 3 times in both her archetypes.
Or actually, 4 in the Scholar, yeah.
4 in the Scholar. So the 3 in the Muscle, 4 in the Scholar. And then your stats, Strike 2, Research 3, Investigate 3, Introspect 2, Charm 1, Intimidate 1. So not a early character by any means, but you're still maybe less than half.
Yeah.
And then also Saskia, who is still relatively new, has not leveled up in the Relic at all, but you have 2 levels in the Sworn. And then your skills are still relatively new, mostly in Heart. Let's see, Research 2, Interface 1, Investigate 2, Introspect 1, Connect 2, Channel 1, and Charm 1 is for Saskia. And then Nightshade is a new character. I don't think has any XP in anything. You have 1 XP in the Skulker, but you might as well be new. Okay, so that's all the characters that we have. Although we didn't really discuss who they were, but I think that's kind of what we... Or I should say, DM, do you want to sunset any of your characters?
No.
Okay, so with that, with Torpo's 2, Carnival's 5, and DM's 4, you get to figure out how all your characters know each other.
I have a pretty easy one for that, actually.
Okay.
Well, for most of them.
Actually, while you kind of explain that, would you mind giving a, like, 1 or 2 sentence descriptor of what the character is?
Well, the, like, linchpin for, like, this whole group, I would say, could potentially be Bobby. Because Bobby is a businessman, Steinwald. He owns 3 different businesses. A burger joint, a junkyard, and a hunting goods store. He is also a member of a criminal conspiracy.
Normal things for normal people.
Yes. That's criminal conspiracy, which is called by people who aren't them, the consortium. Like to do a number of illegal activities throughout the city. And that could be crime. That could be the reasoning for having the group together is because Bobby's technically in middle management in the consortium. So he would be in charge of hiring people to do various jobs here and there.
Okay. So what about your... Okay, so that's Bobby. What about your other characters?
I'll get to them later. But Haley... I have something about Saskia and something about Nellis. And Haley is also a member of the consortium, but she's, on a different level and doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yep. That's also Queen's point of contact as well.
Yeah, they're in the same folder.
Okay. So what we have right now, Bobby is effectively, as part of the team, kind of works as a employer of people. If they need additional help, they can go ahead and get people there. I guess in that case, did anyone else want to? So, and then your characters, Nightshade is also a member of the consortium, and then Queen is also a member of the consortium.
Hired muscle, yes. Or
hired muscle.
Yeah.
Her job is beating the shit out of wizards.
Okay, so go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, go ahead.
I'm just thinking because it's I think if we're using Bobby as the start of the chain of pain here, that means that probably Yuhar, they had a run-in with the consortium because Yuhar is a retired pirate in the equivalent of the South China Sea.
Well, might actually be the South China Sea, but. But depending if you want to have if you want it to be the actual South China Sea, it could be the South China Sea.
In the South China Sea.
Yes, huge fan of Rowena Purr.
Exactly. And so something got too big and too hot. So has entered retirement as a deal to his sister-in-law in the CIA, and as such has come across to Steinwald, which means that probably the consortium is not friendly, but more of like a I'm doing a professional courtesy of letting you know I'm here.
You, for a bit of, like, background lore, the CSN and the USA are not by any means at war, but they, let's just try to think of, like, a comparative relationship.
It's a Cold War.
It's the Cold War, and they are technically on different sides, because the Cold War in this universe, because it can't have anything simple, instead of being a two-sided affair, is a three-sided affair. Because there is basically, you can't really call them the East and West, but it is essentially, let's call it NATO, even though it's not NATO, because that would be weird, because North Atlantic Treaty, it's not NATO. And then you have the, like the Warsaw Pact or whatever you would consider, like, the communist countries, effectively. And then you have a lot of the countries that...
Former British and, well, former colonial nation states that have forged their own way.
Yes. Plus, so, Seedbearer is of that group. Trying to think, like, India is in that. Technically Germany, due to other shenanigans, but also like the Scandinavian countries are also in that. So the Cold War is interesting in this one. Not that it's any less interesting over here, but I digress. Long story short, the CIA having someone in the knowing an organization in the CSN causing problems would make sense. What about other characters?
So, Elvis, I know, they were born and raised in Seedbearer, in Steinwald, like, goes to college at the, like, that nice college that's in town.
Went to college to get more knowledge.
Yeah, but it's probably because she's a weirdo who is like, yes, no, I want to see weird magic shit that's going to probably scar me for life. Started just poking around and, like...
I assume that's how she ran into Aravia.
Yes, she ran into Aravia, and Aravia is, like, a magnet, is a magnet for this kind of thing, so it's just like, we're friends now.
Yeah.
That's another of my questions. In this new timeline, did Elmis still invent all her drone technology?
No, you are starting from scratch, unfortunately.
I'm upset, but I understand.
Maybe I can give you like one or two, but I don't think you're not at spider drone
spy
level.
Network.
You do not have your spy network yet.
That's fine. We can rebuild it. We can make it better.
All you get is a Roomba with a knife. Enjoy.
Okay. So actually, probably should enter because we mentioned Aravia. How did Aravia? I take it Aravia probably knew Bobby or something.
Would have been hired as a muscle at one point, probably.
So first off, Aravia showed up in the Seedbearer region after escaping the FBI, from the north because they kept hunting her down, and she still doesn't quite know why. Because unfortunately for her, they know more about her than she does. Aravia, who is still technically ageless.
Let's use the term ageless.
She is not immortal. She can get murdered real good, but yeah. She's ageless. But the the FBI caught a good whiff of that and started chasing her down, so she escaped to the Seedbearer region and has been doing construction work there, while also running into dumb supernatural shit on the side due to no fault of her own. It just keeps happening.
So yeah, that probably makes it is just Elvis was basically just a walking along and just saw Aravia dealing with some nonsense, and it's just like
I hate the thing in my head because basically I view Elmas as that one hacker guy from the crew in Die Hard.
I thought you were gonna say Dead Not Dead Play, but
no,
can't believe Aravia's John McClane.
No, you but... in that experiment you'd be that one guy, the you'd be Carl. That's played by ballet dancer.
But yeah, so Aravia has just been trying to make any money she can, so she was probably working construction for Bobby, and Bobby, once again, caught a whiff of the weird shit happening. Come to find out, people can't seem to talk to... I'm assuming sylphs are still in the setting.
Yeah, sylphs are still in the setting.
Yeah, they can't talk to sylphs. And, you know, she doesn't quite understand that fact. among the many, many things that happen around her. But okay. So that's probably where Bobby caught her, is working construction after probably a long string of other jobs that she can't seem to hold for some reason.
And I'm guessing that just Bobby just saw this weird tech whiz kid that's just following along and like, you know what, sure.
Caught trying to hack into something, and it's like, you know what, rather than like, yeah, I could use. I think that leaves, in terms of questions, let's see, we got for Carnival, that leaves Peony.
I gotta think a bit more about Peony, like, but and then Virtue's Eternal Reward is.
Those are, cool. So Virtue's Eternal Reward and Sasuke are interesting because that basic, well, unless DM has some, that basically means just found you.
That was going to be another question I had. Do we acquire the two of them under the same circumstances? Did we still do the Lin Xingui job just under?
No, you did not. Circumstances?
All right.
And do you still like the idea of Aravia ripping Virtue's Eternal Reward off a wall, though?
That could very well be the case.
Yeah, because she still, wherever she was, she still watched a bunch of Toku somehow. Because you're not going to escape Lolo.
Yeah, no, that is fine as your background story of being just nonchalantly ripped from the wall of a Chinese restaurant that was just there because they wanted some generic decoration that turned out to be an actual ass sword.
Look, Aravia went there to eat. She saw the funny sword on the wall and wanted to touch it, and the spicy seals on it burned her, so she's like, fuck this, I'm ripping it off.
No, you passed out first.
Yeah, passed out first. Actually, then I got back up and ripped it off the wall. Fuck those spicy seals.
I think that was like one of the four cases of a character actually going down. What's that? Okay, so DM, did you want to figure out how Saskia plays in this?
I might have to think about that one, because Saskia was deliberately in hiding.
Yes. What about Nellos? I take it Nellos is just kind of there for weird shit.
Nellos will have sort of the same storyline that she had the first one, where she did one job for the group once and then wasn't interested in working with them ever again. Okay. But now she's just someone they can maybe run into from now and again.
That worked.
Once again, just ends up involved in the same ghost shit from time to time.
Okay. I think that's everyone? Except for maybe someone we have to think about, but that's all the major players.
Which Claudia's like, that's actually easy. Claudia's just consortium just like hires this weirdo thrill seeker every now and then.
Okay. That works. So there. That is how all the team know each other.
I want to believe that Aravia has no clue about the consortium and just thinks she's being paid for gigs.
I mean, Bobby wouldn't tell any of these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, I just didn't say it. Nellos is a med student who has an obsession with death.
All right.
That's her interest in the supernatural. Saskia's the soul of a dead scholar who's stuck in a rock for her own safety because the organization she was part of got wiped out mysteriously like a millennia ago.
Happens to the best of us.
Oh,
and I guess I should just give the basic concept of Peony is that some rock star from Liverpool who somehow got stuck in the Steinwall, which we gotta figure that out.
And Claudia and Virtue.
Well, Virtue somehow got here, probably similar circumstances where just through trading those various things ended up.
No, there. I bet we didn't give the description of who they are.
Oh, yes.
Right. Claudia is a securities expert that is moonlighting as a master thief. And then, let's see, who else? And Virtue's Eternal Reward is a sword designed to guard the realm from interplanetary invaders who happens to just basically been passed along since the time of Justinian the Great.
Specifically, is it Zhang?
Yes, the Zhang, which is a Chinese straight sword, double-edged, usually from, like, what, 2 meters of length? With a standard cross. You can probably just put a linked image in the description.
Yeah, if you look up Jian on Wikipedia, it's that. It is a very it's a straight sword.
It's a very standard straight sword.
Now, when you activate the transformation sequence, then it becomes looks like a suspiciously like a toy, but somehow still cuts. Like, great.
Yeah. Also talks about buses for some reason.
It talks about what? I missed it.
Buses.
Buses.
Oh, yes.
Journey to the West.
Okay. Is that everyone that got described? Queen just kicks the shit out of wizards. That's basically what Queen does.
Yeah, no, she's hired muscle by the consortium and just murders wizards. It's her life's passion, really.
Okay.
Haley's another agent for the consortium. She's more like an investigator, basically. A fixer.
Okay. Yeah. So that's...
Yes, because once again, fucking, what is it? I forget the condition that Queen has.
Oh.
The name you gave it.
Magic. Well, Magic Bane. There is a fancier Latin name that I bullshitted my way through, but it's called Magic Bane.
Yeah, she's Magic Bane. She essentially... Not quite immune to magic, but it reacts poorly to it, we'll say.
Yeah.
She loves beating up wizards.
Yes. So, that is our crew. So, you all are part of a team. So, let's talk about what exactly gets transferred over in terms of, let's say, minutia of the things you got throughout the campaign, of like the last campaigns. So, to lay some ground rules, you do not know the team... Should have mentioned this a while ago, if you're familiar with my stream series, Lola Puzzles Journal, it's set in the same world. So, just wanted to point that out, because some things that you do not have access to now, you have had no experience, or no, you have had no interaction with Team Reading Rainbow, which means you don't have anyone at the library, there is no knowledge of scrying sessions, you don't know anyone there. You may run into them, but as of now, you are not familiar with them. That being said, if you so choose, I can say that you have some familiarity, because it is still plot relevant. It is not something that would be outside of the general oeuvre of like everything that happens here. You may have a contact that is part of the Seedbearers' various, I'm going to call them law enforcement agencies, but like you may have someone that is a member of like the Gendarm, or the word I can never remember how to pronounce, because they have it's not a military police, but it's effectively a federal police force. You could kind of call it that, because it is mostly
a guard
force. It's like the National Guard, except they actually form like some sort of domestic duties, because they don't do the various departments don't do exactly what a police like. When I say the police, they are not exactly the police. They have more different duties.
There are rules.
Because they, let's just say that they have had cases where in their past they have had corrupt police organizations, and they actually did something about it and actually reformed things and tried to make it a less cop area. So there are various things. That being said, there are like civil and criminal investigatory people. There's still people that look into shit. There's also people that are like around to like provide guidance and or like provide help in case something would need to go, like if like say an incident occurs and they need, you know, support. So you know, if you want to keep access to Toby, that's fine. That being said, if you want another one, because Toby was a character from the previous campaign that was a member of what's called the DPAS, which is the Department of Personal Assistance and Safety, which is effectively think of like a park ranger, is more like akin to what their duties would be.
I'd assume that Aravi at least is on a first name basis with one or more people at the local precinct.
You can be. That being said, if you so want, you can also have someone who is a member of the DCI, which is the Department of, I think it's technically DCCI since I retconned it. Which is the Department of Criminal and Civic Investigation.
Dickie. Yeah, you have it on the known organization thing.
Oh, I did.
The Dickie.
I might have to fix that, but yeah. if you want someone who is more, if you want a, I would say more of like a, if you want your Columbo on, like, as a contact, you can.
Look, I just figure that Aravia is already notable having been chased by the FBI, and also B, probably gets in trouble a lot, as she has anger issues.
Like, given the more criminal bent of how the group came together now, I would say we could still have a cop member, but they should probably not be Toby and probably be someone who's more corrupt.
Yeah, I kind of agree with DM on that.
Okay, so I will... Okay, so I know a character then I will give you. You will have a... So, to kind of elaborate then on the things that have changed, you don't necessarily have a working relationship with Toby. He might show up, but you don't have a working relationship with him. You do. I will, however, give you another working relationship with someone else of a different department.
Aravia's definitely met Toby, though, being known for doing dumb shit in the woods.
Probably.
Does a cow do dumb shit in the woods? Yes.
Probably know Bobby, too, only because Bobby sells hunting goods.
Come to find out, beating up people because they're fucking with sylphs will get you noticed.
Yes. Trying to think of what else. You obviously do not have funding from... you have funding from the consortium, is what it sounds like.
Well, yes. But I have some more questions. First one would be, do we still have the office?
I want to believe we have an office so Aravia has a place to sleep.
That's where Aravia is living.
So what I imagined is because Sea Bear basically one of the, like, everyone gets a house. Like, it is a place where it has actually decent housing. So if you want to stay at, use one of your person's houses as an office,
I assume. So for me, I assume Aravia does not have a house because she's technically not a resident.
You would have temporary housing, at least.
Mm.
It might be like a hotel room or something equivalent.
Yes, she's a big fan of motels.
You do have some sort of housing.
Yes, but I meant like a permanent home.
Let's just say you've been like, hey, so you're not living on the street.
Aravia is a drifter by trade, and so she does nothing but odd jobs.
So yeah, let's just say you're part of like the temporary housing because they can't figure out what to do with you. But you do have a place, so I don't know if you'd have like a space that's dedicated to this. I would imagine you'd use someone's home.
Finally, it's time to bum it up at Elmises.
That being said, if you do want to like say the consortium has like a space that they have for rent for reasons, you could use that.
They meet in a warehouse.
I want to sleep on Elmises' couch. That's my greatest desire.
No paper trails, all meetings happen in a warehouse.
All right. Trying to think, you don't have any contact with, you can choose whether or not you want to, in regards to the Constellation cults like Cassiopeia or any of that, you can choose to actually have a relationship with them, although you obviously did not do any of the jobs that you did.
Well, we did meet Meryl canonically.
Yeah, if we still know the sylphs and at least that, we kind of need to at least met Meryl.
Okay, so... So then you would have a contact then with Luna.
All right.
So you do have some connection there. I was trying to think. You obviously don't. You don't know Martin and Sophie.
No, we do not.
Still have Ash.
Harass the shit out of them.
No.
No, we definitely don't have Ash.
No, you don't have Ash. You don't have the robot. You don't have
my funny stone necklace.
You don't have the necklace.
Well, necklace guy was moved into Ash anyway.
Yep.
Yeah.
We don't have the drone network.
You don't have the drone network?
Nope.
Does Ash still exist in the universe anyway? Like, does someone else have him?
Maybe. You might have another alternative version of Ash that I won't then maybe name him something else so I don't have two Ashes actually technically. Because Beryl's name actually technically is Ash. And I just messed up because I didn't realize I had two Ashes.
It happens. People share names. It's
at least normal. They shared names like Stuart Griffin.
Amazing. Oh yeah, that bit with like the altered dimension diner. Did that still happen?
No, that does not happen.
No, no. Aravia is not nearly the special girl she was. Instead, all she does is just roll around and beat up people.
So I guess what we'll get from that is then. You have a contact, you probably know Meryl, and you will have a contact that is familiar with someone that is in the government, so to speak, who will probably be a member of the Home Guard as well, and there's that. So I'm just trying to look at my list, because it's we establish what we want characters' levels to be, establish how we know each other, established what context you want to keep, and then basically we just went over also the canon beforehand. Okay, so I guess that technically is exactly all you'll need. So I guess in that case, the fun thing is timing wise, if we got that done in like 45 minutes, I was thinking of actually starting the thing, because I do have an idea for what the next arc will be.
No, I'm cool. I'm look, well,
probably, last... I don't have the time. I was trying to think. Is there anything other questions that you wanted to ask beforehand?
No. I think I got all my questions answered.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good on most of my questions.
My one question is targeted directly at Carnival. Are you fine with Aravia bumming it at Elmas's place?
Yes, Aravia is, again, Elmas is absolutely fine with that, as long as she, like, helps out with some of the, like, costs.
Good. Glad to know.
Like, right. Elmas is had, probably has to explain this to her, to their girlfriend about it, but, like, probably, like, brings up some, like, a video of, like, do you see this weird magic shit? Yeah, it's an adventure!
Every day is exciting, so long as the cops don't get called.
And besides, my sister's a lawyer anyway.
Oh, I thought of what to do with Thalskia now.
Okay.
In this universe, she's someone, the consortium acquired her at one point, and she's now their largely uncooperative prisoner.
Ah, she's an SCP, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, shoot, I just realized that I did actually have something that I was thinking of having you all roll dice. I just realized that for the next arc, that instead of me figuring out where something is, and we can probably at least do the starting bit, is what I was going to do is I need three dice rolls.
All right.
In particular, I need a 1d6, let's call it a percentage die, and a 1d4. Unfortunately, I don't have any dice roll things in the Discord.
Look, I'll just go look in
the... It's too late, I'm already in the roll 20, you can't stop me.
Oh, I got a result on your Discord.
Oh, wait, what? Oh, wait. Oh, I didn't realize... Oh, right.
Okay, does this work? Damn. Fucked it.
So okay. what is the one you need one?
So I need a, well, effectively I need a 1d6, a 1d5, and a 1d5. Well, technically percentage, it's a 1d5.
I'll do the 20. D5. Came up as a 4.
Okay. Okay. So.
So you said a d6, a d5, and a d4.
Yep.
All right. So I'll do the d5 then.
I did the d5.
And
it came up as 4.
Okay. So let's see. Let's see. It looks like there was the first three rolls were all 1d6, and then the d5. The carnival roll was a 3.
Yeah, we can stick with that because it's written down there.
Okay, so I need a. I'll do DM's 4. So I need a d4.
All right.
How do I do this?
Yeah, let's do a Torpo rolls a d4 since DM and carnival's rolls are already taken count of 4.
Yeah, so how does this work? Slash roll sides 4? Oh.
Yes, that's last roll.
There you go.
Fuck you.
3. Okay, so let me take...
3. Let's go.
Okay, so let's see. The 1d6 is a 4. Oh, fun. 1d5 is a 3. Okay. And then the 1d4. Okay. Okay, this works. Okay, so... I will start, or I will end this with a teaser for what we're doing. So, the first are the you've always been established. So, your task at hand basically can be summed up as you're known for actually, if we established that you have a Libra contact, which the Libra is effectively, there is a series of cults in the Steinwald that are all named after Ptolemy's constellation. You got stuff like Cassiopeia, Cygnus, Orion, Sagittarius, Draco. I'm just trying to remember the ones he came across, Andromeda. They are all very, in a general aspect, they are all trying to reach extra planar beings or supernatural beings that through various different ways. Some do it through drugs, some do it through other ways, but they're all up to weird shit, is effectively the case. There is kind of a faction war because there are two big factions for these groups. There is Olympia and there is Terra Nova. Olympia is effectively up to more dire aspects. For example, Cygnus, which is a white supremacist organization, effectively, is a member of Olympia, as is Orion, which is basically a group that uses robots to commit terrorism. And then Terra Nova are effectively a lot more casual, like Cassiopeia, which is basically getting stoned off your ass to try and find the gods.
Drug cult, drug cult, drug cult, drug cult.
So to explaining that, Libra is a member, is one of the Terra Nova ones, which basically they're there in force. Like they are there to kind of protect them, to kind of make sure that everything's on the up and up, to make sure that they're nothing from them is going to Olympia cults. And you've been hearing something, or actually you came across, let's even say that Meryl comes up to one of you. And also for reference, Meryl is, think their average
Ashley
height?
Meryl.
Yes, Ashley Meryl. They are average height. They are rather toned. They are a goat person, a like more La Manchian one. So they have like the beard and all that, more darker colored white hair, comes up to you or one of you at one point and basically talks about that they have been hearing some, they've been hearing talks of Cassiopeia's been having a problem. That they are looking for. It seems like they have, like, come across something that seems to be missing. And at Libra, they don't know anything about what this object is. They have just heard this object be referred to as not even, like, description of what it is, because Cassiopeia doesn't even think what they, like, don't know exactly what 100% it is. They have just been hearing, or wanting to find something called Elysium. And Meryl is basically asking at this point, they aren't an investigator. That's not exactly what they do. So they want someone to find Elysium. They don't know anything about what it is. They just know that Cassiopeia has been rumbling about it. And just the word that they have gotten is that they don't want it to get into the wrong hand. And when we come back, we will actually start our proper arc by you all looking for Elysium. So I guess with that, thank you all for listening, and I will hope to see you again when we start proper.
Bye.
Yeah.
Damn, I fucked up by not saying that Ravia Forrest Gumped her way through life, but yes, goodbye.
Goodbye. Previous episodes of Hazeltown Story can be found at bekindrewind.hazel.town or radio.hazel.town. If you would like to know more about the universe and have an interest in video games, you can watch World of the Puzzles Journal, our sister show, that can be found at theater.hazel.town or bekindrewind.hazel.town. If you would like to keep up to date with Lolo, you can follow them at Coast or Blue Sky at Lolo the Puzzler. There is also a Discord server in which you can potentially catch episodes being recorded live at club.hazel.town. Thank you for listening to Hazeltown Story. I welcome you to come back for more.